Hello, America, and all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Logie, Patrick Mifflin, and Teresa Salmon. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah, we've actually got a packed house tonight, which hasn't happened in a while, so I'm glad it's happened. But anyway, it's always nice. This episode's going to be for 21st of January, 2023. We got a few things to talk about. Like, there wasn't really anything, like, huge, like, world-changing that happened this week, but there were a handful of things that are very, I would say, consequential, and, well, you'll see why. It has to do with stuff that can sometimes be a little abstract or not entirely something you would think necessarily involves you, but, well, as you're going to find out... All of this shit involves you in some small way or another. But among other things that happened this week, the Supreme Court released their report about trying to find out, you know, who it was that leaked the draft decision for what would eventually be overturning Roe v. Wade. There is some stuff involving the debt ceiling that's coming up that you're going to want to learn about. We found out that the current Prime Minister of New Zealand has announced plans about her future in politics. Also, you may have noticed we had Martin Luther King Day come up this week, and there was a new sculpture that was supposed to come out, and it came out, and it was premiered, and it's getting some, let's just say, mixed reviews, because it's a little too abstract, I guess you could say. We got that and a bunch of other stuff to talk about. All that and more in this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off with, as always, we start off with all the stuff we've been doing up to this point this week that made this week ours. So, Chris, start us off. What have you been doing this week?
Oh, enjoying the vast array of weather we get in Ohio.
Yeah.
rain throughout the week, some snow.
Mm-hmm.
Here and there, we're supposed to get a couple inches overnight for Sunday, so mm-hmm. that'll be fun. Then we had a couple times in the 50s, so
mm-hmm.
you know, everything you want for that. But yeah, I've been watching some stuff here. Watched That 90s Show, the mm-hmm. new Netflix.
Ooh, how is it?
It's 10 episodes, and I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Very much captures a lot of the same vibe that the original show had,
mm-hmm.
Which people are having weird views of, like, oh, this is cringe. It's like, that's the original show.
Yeah.
It's literally about them being weird teenagers.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But yeah, the general premise is that it's, I think, 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Eric and Donna have visited their, you know, Red and Kitty's house. With their daughter Leia.
Of course, that's what they named her.
Of yep. course.
Yeah, because Eric is a professor of the religion of Star Wars.
Yeah, Red has fun with that.
Yeah. And so, like, they are going to go to Huntsville, Alabama. I don't know why they go up to Wisconsin to go to Alabama, but. I think it's some trips for summer vacation. But they're supposed to go to Huntsville, Alabama for space camp. And she's not thrilled with that, so she comes with the idea to stay with her grandparents for the summer. And in the process meets some new friends, some that are neighbors that live in what was Donna's house.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad doesn't live there anymore, so she meets up with new friends. Mm-hmm. And one of them happens to be a Kelso.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jackie and Michael's son.
Yep.
Who's supposedly smarter, but also still kind of aloof like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but yeah, they have a variety of fun activities happening, various things going on. Makes for a fun show. They do a good job with bringing back some of the old cast members throughout, including like Leo and Fez. Hyde doesn't show up. They never mention him at all.
With good reason.
As he deserves. So that's pretty good. Even Bob shows up because he is, you know, Leia's grandfather as well. So yeah, they do a good job with all that stuff. It's a good
probably
fun show.
Also to explain why he doesn't live in the house next door.
No, more than it's, I think he got a divorce with his wife, the mom there, and sort of comes back to visit and see his granddaughter and all that. To which Red and Kitty are not thrilled because he is just too much for them.
Yeah.
So there's that. And yeah, they do a lot of fun stuff, and they do good music choices because it's a lot of, you know, mid to early 90s hip hop and pop music and rock and stuff like that. So there's a good mix of that stuff in there. So yeah, it's a fun show. Definitely worth checking out. Only 10 episodes, so you can kind of burn through it pretty quickly. I do hope it survives for a while so they can get to 1999 and have Eric deal with episode one of Star Wars and how that goes for him.
That would be a fun bit of writing.
Yes.
Yeah, he'll have complicated feelings about that.
I mean, didn't we
all did.
Yeah.
Although, so, I don't know, apparently for people who are younger than us, it wasn't that complicated.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, you know, they understand that, you know, Star Wars is a bunch of movies about space wizards, not a lifestyle.
But yeah, that was fun. Been going back to what we do in the shadows to watch some more of. Now I'm in the middle of season 4, and they're just doing some weird shit now.
Which is Colin Robinson still alive? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I was gonna say a character dies and gets reborn with some very weird CG doing that.
It
really is. It took me a while to be like, wait, is that the actual face of the kid, or is what's going on here? And they show a close up, and I'm like, oh, okay, they're just doing this. Okay,
it's creepy as all hell.
Yeah, as well as other weird shit that happens. Maybe one character decides they don't want to be a vampire anymore, and all the weird shit that goes with that. So, yeah, lots of fun stuff there. Not done with that season just yet, but looking forward to it. For games, been playing more One Piece Odyssey. Still in Alabasta as I'm working my way through that. But now they just introduced crafting to it. Because I've been picking up a lot of shit for that. But they let you make food with Sanji, and Usopp makes various balls that he can shoot at enemies with some of that stuff. So that's been fun. And then they just finally introduced fast travel, which involves these monkeys traveling, taking you around, I guess. And so I've been wondering what these signs were, and I figure out at a certain point, like, oh, these are probably fast travel signs. They're just at the right points of not having you run around so much, but yeah, still enjoying that a lot here. Been wanting to go back to some older stuff I haven't finished and decided to get back into Mass Effect 3. And that is a game that is very hard to go back to, mainly because it is very hard to figure out like what you were doing.
Yeah.
At times. Cause the way they throw quests at you, you get some just directly talking to people. And other times it's just you walked by people that just start having conversations. And then it's like, oh, here's a thing you can do. Like, what do you mean this is a thing I can do? It's like, oh, you go listen to somebody that's like talking about the religious scripture. And it's like, oh, you can go to their planet and get the book for them. I'm like, what? This is some weird shit. The way they track that stuff is weird because it's not like a modern RPG where you'd be able to track it. It just tells you like, oh, you just go do this. kind of thing. It's a lot of just, you have to go explore a lot. I was where I left off. I was on the Citadel, so it's like, all right, I'll just run around, listen to various steps and these people talking about things. And then talking to different people around there. They just throw them all around. I'm like, I don't know who's on my team. And this game's not set up to tell me that when I'm outside of the Normandy. Kind of stuff. But yeah, still fun. Still holds up pretty well for the most part, though. I keep wanting to in combat do some things, and I have my special abilities that are mapped. Like one of them's like a melee stomp kind of thing, ground pound kind of thing. And I keep doing it when I'm in cover, all that kind of stupid stuff. But for the most part, still holds up pretty well. I just have to get used to things as I'm working my way through it, but I'm still pretty early. So I'm mostly just looking at the wiki for all the various side quests. You're like, which one of these turn off when I go past certain missions? And just try and organize that. It's a little bit too much of that. Hmm. But there's that. And with the Persona 3 and Portable and Persona 4 Golden releases this week on all the consoles.
Yes.
I picked up Persona 3 Portable on my PS5. And I always forget when I start this game that it starts with a girl about to shoot herself in the head.
Yep.
And it's like, all right, that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Progress, I guess. I've only played like an hour of it, just working my way through the early parts of it, which hasn't had too much. But yeah, I posted a video of the first scene where Yukari, they're confronted with a big monster, and Yukari pulls out her evoker gun, tries to shoot herself in the head, and gets knocked over. The gun just falls over to your character. Like, all right, I'll shoot myself in the head. Not knowing exactly what's going on. I was like, this is when JRPGs changed forever. With this game.
Yeah, because it basically, the reason this game caught on so big, more or less like a cult hit, is because it became a meme. Like, literally, you know, it was that one JRPG where you power up by shooting yourself in the head.
Yeah, and it was a stylistic... And
it makes sense in context.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a stylistic change that we hadn't really seen in JRPGs here in the West.
Nope.
Because the first two games, or technically three games, didn't really release over here in any way.
Well, the first one did, but not in a way that was...
accessible
or good.
Yeah. It was like a PS1 release that nobody, not even Atlas at that time, really knew what they had.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, kind of the take.
The first two games had more or less completely different creative teams behind them, so that's also something to keep in mind. It was actually the team that went on to make the Caligula effect.
Yeah.
And whereas it was, you know, you had new writers, new artists, and everybody stepping in for 3 through 5 and really revitalized the franchise.
Yeah, and revitalized JRPGs as, hey, they don't have to be, you know, fantasy-oriented, D&D-oriented kind of stuff. It's like, you can have sort of... people would just call it like a dating simulator thing, which it wasn't really. It was just more of a way to enhance your other characters outside of just pure combat. A means of getting more story out of things. And, you know, it's these kids that are going to high school and then they get to the dark hour, which just has a weird connotation out of context. That, you know, is when these high schoolers go to fight demons and such to save the world. That kind of weird stuff. But yeah, it's still fun. It holds up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
They have decent amount of options for various things. A lot of stuff that was already in the original PSP version. Things like, hey, what if you had a JRPG where it auto-advanced the text as it's being spoken? What about that One Piece Odyssey? That kind of thing. Yep, breaking up the big dungeon so that you can play it in more bite-sized chunks versus having to do several floors together before you could get to save points, which they mostly mitigated in Persona 4 as a thing, where you could have more save points there. Though I think JRPGs at this point should just let you save anywhere. It's not a big deal, but there you go. That's been pretty much it for what I've been doing. So how about you, Pat?
I've just been drowning in Switch games, and I love every minute of it. I've really slept on the system through the majority of this generation, and so getting the chance to just sit down and, first of all, pile a bunch of games into my library and really get to feel like how great some of these games were that I just really wasn't paying attention to because I was so fixated on certain genres or what was going on this platform or that at any given time. And yeah, it's been really refreshing, and I don't know, it feels kind of weird actually having confidence in my purchases too, because that's something that has kind of dwindled over the years, kind of a death by a thousand cuts type of situation with whether it's disc rot or whether it's just poor stewardship of online marketplaces, which Nintendo is guilty of. But the Switch doesn't do online check-ins unless you're playing on a secondary console. And it uses entirely solid-state media, so you know, the only thing that you might ever have to repair on your Switch is the fan. And I'm sure by the time that becomes an issue, there'll be plenty of them out on the market. So, like, it feels like a system that I'm investing in long term. And it's been a good long time since I felt that way. Other than that, I've been cranking out videos as fast as I can. I've been on vacation for the past week, but I didn't really end up doing anything I really wanted to do with the time. So, toward the end of it, I've just decided I'm going to do what I know, and that's just put time and energy and create content for my channel. And got a few videos done this week, and probably get one or two more out before I go back to work on Monday. So that's been nice. Other than that, because of the Steam Deck, I've been going back to Outrun 2006 Coast to Coast a lot. And so I finally sat down and finished my custom soundtrack, got even the sample audio for the menu taken care of. So it's all custom audio that I've got in that game, except for the stuff on the original soundtrack that I wanted to keep, which is quite a bit. But while we're on the subject of Persona, I did find out that Lotus Juice and Outrun go together really well. And so there's some of his stuff on my custom soundtrack, and yeah, it just works. It kind of gives me an idea for what a potential Outrun 3 could sound like. And because he's so closely affiliated with Atlus, which is Sega at this point, kind of gives me some hope for that we might actually see it. So yeah, that's about it for me this week.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
I also indulged in a little bit of the new reboot series, I guess. And I also caught up, we just like marathon through, I think this season is season 6 of Rick and Morty. I'm not sure. It might be 7, but we went through that, which was good. It was a good season. Not sure if it's like my all-time favorite season, but it was solid. A lot of interesting twists and turns there. I did watch the first episode of that 90s show. And I will watch more. I watched the first episode of Night Court. I will not watch more.
That bad.
John Larroquette, awesome, of course. he clearly remembers what it was like to play Dan Fielding. And he carries the whole damn thing.
So this is a reboot. This is...
It's a continuation, I guess. Yeah, not technically a reboot.
It's new shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like when Scrubs spun off another Scrubs.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's exactly like that.
I didn't know that was being... I didn't know that was being brought back. I just thought maybe it dropped on Netflix or something and people are rediscovering it. Or
nope.
Okay. Yeah, it's on Peacock. I'm assuming it's also on broadcast. I don't know. One of these days I'm going to actually build an antenna because we're too far from the antenna feed on the roof of our building to pick up anything, which would be wonderful because, you know, when we lived on the fourth floor and we're in the middle of the building, we could pick it all up. But yeah, I watched that on Peacock. I got that given to me for free for a year. So, okay. But yeah, I definitely do want to go back and watch the rest of that 90s show. And Chris, I'm glad you said it was only 10 episodes because that's super doable. That's the same as Rick and Morty. I let my membership or my subscription for Final Fantasy 14 expire on Tuesday. So I'm going to take a little break because I really need to play some other games. I want to play some more Red Dead Redemption 2. I haven't finished that. Haven't finished Ghost of Tsushima. Pokemon Violet. There's, like everybody else, I have a laundry list of shit I have not finished. And I like to spend some time on that. And maybe not, you know, just drown in one game and one game only for a little bit.
Yeah.
But if I last 6 weeks, though, I'll be surprised. So
we didn't even get Babil done.
I know. And like, I kept on doing daily roulette, and I think I had my summoner to like 86. So I was really close to 90, but I didn't. Well, of course, Dancer's 90, but you know. And I tried this cottage cheese phase, the craze that's going around. I don't know if you guys see this kind of crap. I usually don't, honestly. But every now and again, it sneaks in. And it's blending cottage cheese with other things to make it palatable. I grew up in the
80s.
Parfait. Yeah. I grew up in the 80s. I am never going to like cottage cheese. I am never going to like grapefruit. Just... early 80s kids got that stuff shoved down their throats. They're not going to eat it. So I tried it with pumpkin so it could make like some weird pumpkin pie type. Oh my God, no. No, the only thing that saved it was the whipped cream on top. So if anybody... Yeah,
I don't know if it's a Utah thing, but the common thing for that I've seen for cottage cheese is like Jell-O.
Oh Lord. That's vile. Why would people do?
Or you can do what late President Richard Nixon used to do, which was mix it with ketchup.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'd rather shit a knife.
Yeah.
That probably looks like and smells like vomit of the worst kind.
Yeah.
Ooh. just say no to cottage cheese. That's the life lesson that I want to give this week. That nobody asked for because everybody else knew. And I was gullible enough to think, well, you know, everybody's saying that it's great. Yeah, they also said that, you know, those barefoot socks were great and they weren't. You know, the ones where your toes had separate little compartments. Mm. Those weren't great either. But yeah, other than working, that's pretty much it. My brain is fried, so I just make it through work and go on to the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once we get some sunlight back, I know, Chris, you were complaining about Midwestern weather. It's everything all at once and spread out and not spread out, and it's crazy, but there's no sun.
Yeah.
So.
And today was like high of 38, cloudy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was about the same here, but about 10 degrees colder. And it's been cloudy since I don't even know when. I just don't even know. It's been probably 2, maybe 3 weeks now. So it starts to get, it starts to affect your mood. But hopefully we'll get some sun maybe in 2 weeks, because the 10-day forecast ain't promising. But that's pretty much it for me. What have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, I have been pretty much putting all of my game playing into Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And holy shit, does that game just go in a direction I was not expecting, like, at all. There were little hints here and there about stuff that was happening, and if you've played the first two Xenoblade games, you might have a sense of sort of where some of this might be going. But then it'll just throw a real left hook at you. But basically what happens is, well, I'm not going to spoil the whole thing, but what happens is after you get to a certain point in the game, you start to find out why the world that is presented in Xenoblade 3, why it is the way it is. And, like, obviously, if you play Xenoblade and you already, played the first two Xenoblade games and you sort of know how the world building and the universe works, you already know, it's literally a combination of the first two universes of Xenoblade, of the Xenoblade series, colliding, basically. And this is the result. But what you end up finding out is that it's really complicated and hard to try and explain in words. Because I mentioned when I first started playing this game, that there was this weird thing involving, like, cloning that seems to be a thing that shows up here. Well, what happens is, it turns out, yes, it is not some red herring. There is cloning going on. And basically what happens is, every time somebody who is either in the one of the two warring nations, when they die, their life force can be recollected and they can basically be reborn again through one of, as yet another pod baby, basically. But what happens is that typically people are not, none of them are able to come in contact with, like, their old body, their old husk, whatever. But then what happens is about midway through, one of the characters actually comes across their old body, which actually still has their dog tag that has their name on it. And then what happens is you actually come in contact with people called the Lost Numbers, who are essentially the descendants of a group of people who defected from both of the two warring nations to go and sort of start their own little place outside of the influence of the two queens and the flame clocks and the consoles and all that. So they actually are going through, like, the normal sort of life cycle of, birth, aging, death, that thing, which is something that the pod people don't do because they only have about a 10-year lifespan. And so the party ends up encountering, like, actual people going through regular life for the first time. And it's a lot for them to process. But what especially gets is that you find out that not only has the struggle that these people have had against sort of the consoles been going on for a while, it's basically been going on for, like, a millennia, and a couple of the heroes in your party have basically been trying to do this over and over and over again for, like, several different times. And there's, like, this law of return type thing going on, and, like, it's not really a time loop because, that would imply that, they're restarting in the same place. No, it's just that, every time they get reborn, they eventually end up getting drawn back, and then they end up going and joining, the Lost Numbers again, and then trying to do it again, and then something happens. And it's just, it's a real mind bender, and it's so good, you guys. It's so good. Yeah, I know people would say, you know, would ask, like, you know, would I need to play the first two Xenoblade games, you know, to understand this? You don't really, but a lot of the narrative, like, reveals may not land as hard if you haven't. Because we do get some serious callbacks here. And yeah, it's good. It's really good. It's so damn good, guys. Yeah, so I've been playing that. What else did I do? Oh, I got the Blu-ray box set for the entire Nadia, The Secret of Blue Water series.
Oh, nice.
Yep. For those of you who don't know what this is, before Hideaki did Evangelion, this is the anime that he did before it. And it's kind of a Gainax joint, but also kind of not. It's complicated. But
I believe Yoshiyuki Sadamoto was also involved.
Yeah, he was the character designer, if I'm remembering correctly. And if you watch this, you'll like, yeah, this anime just eats up early 90s, like, anime style. And basically, it's a story that more or less takes place in sort of the literary universe of Jules Verne. There's a lot of references to his work and his books and stuff. And the very first episode is essentially based around, like, the World's Fair and, like, an attempt to do, like, a flying machine. And specifically, you know, the idea of, like, heavier than air and lighter than air flying machine, which, for those of you who don't know, here's a fun little tidbit for you. Jules Verne was, of course, an aviation enthusiast back when, you know, aviation was still a thing that was getting on its first legs, you know. You know, this was before, like, you know, before the flight of Kitty Hawk, you know, with the Wright brothers. So there was this big debate that was going on for a long time, is that, was the future of air travel going to be lighter than air, you know, like blimps and dirigibles, or was it going to be heavier than air? And Jules Verne was one of the small group of people who said that, oh no, the future of air travel is going to be heavier than air, because heavier than air has benefits that lighter than air doesn't. And what, you know, he ended up being right. Because eventually, you know, blimps and dirigibles were overtaken by airplanes and helicopters and stuff like that.
The Hindenburg will do that.
Yeah. And then there's, like, there's this thing where there's, like, this guy who's this kid who's working sort of as a, he discovers this dark skinned girl named Nadia. They end up getting chased by these people in a tank. It's so good. It is so good. It is so much fun to watch. And it looks gorgeous, too. Even all these years later, it still looks gorgeous. Heavily recommend it. If you ever get a chance to play it, get a chance to watch it. It's just, it's a great anime. One of the best. And weirdly enough, it kind of does sort of hit on some of the things that would end up showing up in Evangelion later on. Mostly because, much like with what happened with Evangelion, they started running out of money towards the end, so they had to get kind of artsy in order to get around it.
God damn it, Ono.
Yeah. Seems to be a common theme. Other than that, books. I've started this thing where I'm wanting to read some of the earlier work by Philip K. Dick. The stuff that he wrote before he started seriously getting into the drugs, and, like, that basically colored all of his work that would come later. Don't get me wrong. He still, like, all of his early stuff still had, like, a lot of the stuff you would expect from his later stuff. But it was often in a more compact form and not quite as trippy. So, like, the book I'm reading right now is a book he wrote way back in the 50s called The World Jones Made. And it's basically a story about a sort of post-nuclear Earth where after, like, this big, you know, the Cold War goes hot and there's a war and nukes get flying and, you know, people have to to get the pieces afterwards. There's radiation, so people become mutants, stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. Eventually there's a bunch of space travel. Because now that you kind of wreck the world, you realize you kind of need another world to work with. So they start doing space travel, trying to find other places that humans can inhabit. They find Venus can possibly be inhabited if, you know, they engineer humans in such a way to do it, but it's kind of ancillary to the story. Basically what happens is that after the war ends, the new sort of, I guess you could call it regime, they call it FedGov or the World Federal Government, decides to base its ideology around the concept of relativism, which is that everybody can more or less do as they want as long as they don't try to impose their will on others. The problem with this is that in order to enforce it, they basically have to start their own secret police and labor camp system. And in fact, one of the main characters is one of those secret police. And what happens is that one day he goes to a carnival and he ends up meeting this guy named Floyd Jones. And Floyd Jones is what's known as a precog. He has precognitive abilities where he can see perfectly 1 year in the future. And it's proven that this is exactly what he can do. He knows exactly what's going to happen over the next following year. And he kind of shows that it's kind of sucks because basically he lives his whole life basically in the past. Like he describes it, like when he's talking to like the police interrogators, he describes it as like, yeah, what you guys are experiencing right now is like past for me. I'm basically going through everything that is past like a second time, because I always know what's going to be happening a year in the future. He even was able to see a year into the future when he was still in the womb. So, yeah, imagine being able to have all that time before you're even born. And then here's the thing that happens. While all of this is happening, there's this group of sort of jellyfish-like aliens called Drifters that are slowly starting to settle down on the Earth. And why they're doing it, nobody really knows. All that Jones knows is that he hates them and wants them all destroyed. So he basically starts a cult that eventually turns into a political movement where he basically eventually becomes the world dictator. And yeah, it's a Philip K. Dick story, so you kind of know how this is going to end.
Yeah.
Mostly showing that just because you know a future doesn't mean you're going to know what may happen in a year and a day. Yeah. But it's good shit. And other than that, remember, guys, I told you about that job interview I had?
Yes.
It went good. I'm not going to really hear anything about it until next week. So I still don't really have much news about it, but the interview actually went well. So it's, the good thing is it's like a 9:30 to 6 job on weekdays. I get the weekends off.
Nice.
I get the weekends off, but they sort of like cycle who has to work on the weekends, which basically just means that, you get one of the weekdays off, and the day that you have to work on the weekend is not really a half day. It's more like it's instead of being from like 9:30 to 6, it's 8:30 to 4. It's not a complicated job. It's just transport. You know, basically me and just the team are transporting, you know, people from other parts of the hospital to, you know, the MRI place and the you know, radiology and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Not terribly complicated, but anyway. That's what I have been doing this week. Do we want to add anything more before we move on?
No.
Nope. Okay, then. Well, then it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's factoid. And sort of continuing on with where we started last week, which was talking about the three of the big four games that were the infamous four in the, back in the early 90s of that sort of became the sort of surrounding sort of lightning rods of violence in video games. We're going to move on from Time Killers, which was the game we talked about last week, to another one of these games, which is Lethal Enforcers. Now, did any of you guys ever get a chance to play this back in the day?
Yeah, I actually had it on Super NES.
Yeah. So, sort of a little bit, sort of a background. Lethal Enforcers was a light gun shooter. It was as an arcade game back in the day, originally in Japan and then in the U.S. It was developed by Konami. It was designed and directed by Yoshiaki Hatano. And it was, in a lot of ways, it was a big sort of step up in how a lot of light gun games had been up to that point. So I want to sort of give everybody an idea of like what light gun games were like before Lethal Enforcers existed. So
Hogan's Alley.
Yeah, we had stuff like Duck Hunt. And of course, Duck Hunt was originally based on a toy that, what's his name? The guy who created the Game Boy.
Oh, Yokoi.
Yeah, Gunpei Yokoi. That was one of the series of toys he made before for Nintendo before he moved on to doing video games. It was basically a projector combined with a little gun accessory that would project an image of a sort of little image of a duck on a dark wall that would float around, and then you had to try and shoot it. And then, of course, once the Nintendo, the Famicom came out, it was eventually sort of transferred over into a video game format, which, of course, featured everybody's most hated little dog.
In fact,
yeah,
in the arcade version, you can pop the dog.
Yes, you can. You can, in fact, pop the dog. Yeah. And, of course, Duck Hunt also came with, if you remember back in the day, Duck Hunt was the second little game. And I'm not talking about Super Mario Brothers. I'm talking about the other light gun game that was in it, which was the Clay Pigeon Shooter.
Oh, yep. I totally forgot that existed.
Yeah, it was one of the other things you could play in the game.
It was actually the best part of it, too.
Yeah, I genuinely liked it more than Duck Hunt. Because unlike Duck Hunt, it was actually like really challenging. like Duck Hunt, it was really easy to cheat at if you knew how.
Yeah.
And then what else did you have for light guns? You had Hogan. And for those who don't know what Hogan's Alley is, Hogan's Alley is actually it used to be. It was the sort of code name for a training facility that was owned by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It was a basically it was inhabited by actors who role play the parts appropriate to the training, and some would play innocent bystanders, others would play terrorists, bank robbers, drug dealers, or whatever. And basically, you had to go in there, and it was a way to, you know, teach investigative techniques, firearm skills, and defensive techniques. None of that is really important. What you got to know is that eventually it became the basis for a video game that was put out by Nintendo, where it was essentially a shooting range type thing with like cardboard human stand-ins. So the point of that is at that point, that was more or less the most, I guess you could say, direct violence against people that we had gotten in shooting games up to that point. Does Wild Gunman technically count? I guess it does, but it was also like super cartoony. But the thing is, the point is, up until this point, this had all been based around either cartoon, you know, either like regular shooting sports that was respectable, you know, duck hunting, clay pigeons, or it was based on stuff that was either overly cartoony or was, based around like police training. So Hogan's Alley, Wild Gunman, stuff like that. And then right around the turn of the decade, they started creating digitized sprites. And that's what
got changed. A lot of companies in trouble.
Yeah, and that's where things started to change, because suddenly, for the first time, you weren't just shooting at pixels on a screen that looked cartoony. You were shooting at things that looked like actual people, that, you know, sounded like actual people, and most importantly, bled like actual people. Because the thing about the original Lethal Enforcers in the arcades is that it had blood. And every time you shot somebody, they would bleed. Now, we're not talking like ultra-realistic violence. Hell, we're not really even talking the kind of cartoony type bloodshed that you get from Mortal Kombat in the time, whereas, you know, you punch someone and it looks like they got hit by a semi-truck with the amount of blood that comes spilling out. We're talking about like a mild blood spurt coming out. And it was like, it wasn't even like, you know, the type of blood spurt that would like fall out and fall on the floor and like pool like in Mortal Kombat. It was just like a sprite animation that would happen and then disappear. But this was 1992, and yeah, it also had to do with the fact that you were using something in this game called the Justifier. Do you guys remember the Justifier? If you don't, I'll let you. Yeah, if you had a Sega Genesis, you remember the Justifier. It was basically the Sega's answer to Nintendo's Zapper.
Oh, that was the Menacer. The Justifier was the one that Konami made for both platforms.
Yeah. It was a light blue or light pink light gun that looked like a service revolver. Specifically a Colt Python.
Almost a comedically large one, too.
Yeah. And basically how this game played was, supposedly this guy working for the Chicago PD named Don Marshall. He's at a donut shop on a break. He's sipping some coffee. He gets a call from his dispatcher. There's like a criminal organization invaded the town. They need his help. He's like the only survivor left. Of course, he can get a helper to second play with him. And then you go out and you start shooting criminals. And remember, this is sprite criminals, meaning they look like actual people who sound like actual people and react like people when you shoot them. And this is all happening from a first-person perspective. So, basically what happens is you do that, you play the game, you know, and of course, considering it was a Konami arcade game, it wasn't a game you could do easily, because, well, that's how these arcade games work. They basically work to try and drain as much of your money as you possibly could. But
Konami was real good at it, too.
Oh, yes, they were. Now, there were some regional differences between the two versions. The Jap-8 arcade version had a very simple default revolver sort of animation to show how to reload it, whereas the ones you got had a version showing a woman shooting outside of the cabinet screen to reload. And one of the additional enemy taunts included the words "die pigs," which of course were removed from the US and European versions.
Talking.
Did I mention, by the way, that this was the year that Body Count first album came out? Yeah.
Just putting that out there.
Yeah, just sort of putting that out there, you know, just putting it out. And the game came out and, it did extremely well at the arcades. It was like the third top grossing upright game of 92, for from November, December into January. And then it ended up becoming like,
that's what the top two were.
Yeah, pretty much anybody could. And of course, like, Pat said, there were home versions of it. And of course the home versions were, obviously, they were going to be downgrades because this was still the age when consoles still hadn't caught up to arcades and technological capacity. And of course, with the pretty sure with I'm not sure with the Sega version because I never had a Sega Dreamcast, but I know with the Super NES version there was no blood. So yeah. Oh, and there was a sequel, by the way.
Yep. Set in the Old West.
Yep, Lethal Enforcers 2 Gunfighters. There would also be a compilation, PlayStation, a couple years later. Konami released it.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and there was also a series called Police 911 that Konami would release that would sort of be a Japan-themed sequel to these. And there also was Lethal Enforcers 3, which was actually just a port of Seigi no Hero, which was another light gun game from Konami. As for the controversy, well, like I said, this was the first light gun game that used photorealistic imagery. This was also, like I said, during the time period when I had Mortal Kombat. So these all got kind of put together. So in 1993, the United States Senate had a hearing on video games that were led by Senators Joe Lieberman and Herb Kohl. Now, the reason this is significant is because during C-SPAN coverage of the hearings, Joe Lieberman showed Nintendo and Sega the Konami Justifier that was bundled with the game, saying that it looked too much like a real revolver. For the record, I just want to show this, just to show everyone. This is what the Justifier looked like. I'm going to put this in the... That's the Justifier right there. Yeah. Obviously, that is not the end of the sort of whole infamous four that we got here. We got one more game that we'll be talking about, and we'll be talking about it next week. It's probably the one out of all four of these that gets the most infamy, mostly because of the fact that it managed to get so much of its success sort of post-haste because it wasn't that good. Because of the fact that so much of the criticism came from people who had obviously never played it. And finally, because of just the weird, and I mean weird, history of its development. But we'll be talking about that next week. And for right now, this has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the show. As always, the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is the House GOP, because they officially, once again... Well, I say once again, I'm pretty sure this has happened more than once before, but it's one of those things of bullshittery that's annoying. The House GOP has let the U.S. government hit its debt ceiling.
Yep. Seems like every freaking time.
Yeah.
I believe the last time was in 2011.
Yep.
Oh, I think it was more recent than that, wasn't it?
I don't know, I think we've come close, but that was the last time we've actually let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused some shit. You think the economy is bad now?
Mm-hmm.
Wait until this takes its effect, until they allow it to be raised again?
Mm-hmm.
Because they had no problems doing that while Trump was president.
Nope.
But now the House GOP thinks that, they're going to do all these things for us.
Mm-hmm. It's
like, no, we'll let you guys take the fall for this.
Mm-hmm.
Janet Yellen has been talking about this, saying, hey guys, we got to get this done by Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So the Treasury Department was preparing a contingency plan to avoid a default in the country's debt. Because the way that debt works with the U.S. government is basically we just pay off the stuff that needs to be paid off right away. Mm-hmm. Just going to have rolling debt as we go.
Mm-hmm.
The special measures being undertaken include suspending investments in the Civil Service Retirement Fund,
mm-hmm.
Are essentially accounting maneuvers to avoid breaching the country's borrowing limit.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. economy runs a deficit, hence it needs to borrow money to pay its bills. Currently, the U.S. can only borrow up to about $31.4 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
Raising the debt limit used to be a routine exercise for Congress, but it's become more political as Congress has become more extremist.
Polarized.
Yeah. And also because a lot of them are going into it without not really knowing how the U.S. economy actually works.
Yeah.
Um,
I think this will, if it keeps going, will affect people's Social Security payments and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. Which, by the way, that's one of the reasons they're doing that is Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, they want to cut it.
Yeah.
Using this word entitlement, like, it's horrible, but these are our contracted benefits that we paid into. It's not an entitlement. They need to stop doing what they're doing. And it's already bad enough because, you know, we hit the beginning of the year and a lot of people's medicines that used to be covered under Medicare and Medicaid are no longer covered. So where does that leave them?
Yeah.
At least the House GOP having ideas like, what if we got rid of income tax and institute a 30% national sales tax?
Okay. Is that going to affect Jeff Bezos? No, they're going to find a way so it won't.
Well, it won't because he has so much money that 30%, you know, on something that costs $100 is nothing to him.
Yep.
Whereas for people in the middle and lower class,
it's everything.
That's a big increase.
Yeah.
You thought inflation was bad.
Yep.
I shouldn't say that. They shouldn't get it through because it's going to tank every single aspect of the economy. Nobody's going to go to McDonald's in the morning for their, you know, breakfast on the way to work. It's just not going to happen.
Mm. Yeah. But like I said, it's also because a lot of them are sort of, well, I say a lot of them. Some of them, I think some of them don't actually believe it, but they go through with it anyway. But unfortunately, a lot of them just really don't know how the American economy actually works. They think that, or at least they try to sell the idea that, you know, home economics is somehow similar to the economy of an entire country.
There's this word, it's scalability, and they don't understand that.
Yeah. But it's not the only time the GOP. There's also a man in New Mexico who has been charged after going on a series of shooting at the homes of Democrats.
Yeah.
This happened.
Solomon Pena, who unsuccessfully ran for a state house seat in New Mexico last November, was arrested Monday in Albuquerque for allegedly paying four men to shoot the homes of four elected officials. They say he paid about $500 and that he took part in one shooting himself. So that's great. In one case, bullets tore through the walls of a 10-year-old girl's bedroom as she slept.
Jesus Christ.
Just before that attack, police allege Pena had urged the gunmen to aim lower when they shot at politicians' houses. Charges against Pena, whom the police called the mastermind behind the string of attacks, includes conspiracy to commit a felony, shooting at an occupied dwelling, and shooting from a vehicle. And so he was booked into the Albuquerque Metropolitan Detention Center on Monday.
May he rot in peace.
Yeah. Seriously, screw this guy. And of course it had happened in friggin' New Mexico.
The home of Walter White.
Yep.
That place.
Where a man once threw a pizza on a roof.
Yep.
And also started a criminal empire.
And some other things. Some other things happened as well. Yeah. And last but not least, the Supreme Court said they couldn't figure out who leaked the Roe v. Wade draft decision. Here's a hint. It was definitely one of them.
Probably Alito.
Yeah, almost certainly him.
But yeah, they put out a big statement saying that they did, you know, an extensive investigation and just couldn't figure out who it was. Then had to put out like a follow-up statement and be like, oh yeah, we actually talked to the, you know, the justices, obviously, and it's like, not really any details sort of what they talked about or if they, you know, grabbed their phones and did all the forensic stuff with that. You know, anything you would do if you were really, really serious about this. So, you know, it's just going to be a mystery now.
Yeah, it's going to be a mystery because, you know, it was one of the members of the Supreme Court of themselves that did it. That's their story, and they're sticking to it, I guess. The fact that they had one of their own, you know, do an internal review seems to show an awful lot of what their intentions were from the beginning. But yeah. So, fortunately, it's not all bad. We also have some heroes of the week to talk about. Namely, this one, the Biden administration, they revealed a new program to allow groups of private citizens to sponsor refugees to live in the U.S.
Yeah. This is a cool system here.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Welcome Corps.
Mm-hmm.
It was built by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken as the boldest innovation in refugee resettlement in four decades.
Mm-hmm.
Under the group, groups of at least five individuals can apply to sponsor refugees, help them acclimate to life in the U.S. With the help of a consortium of nonprofit resettlement organizations. And yeah, these groups must raise a minimum of $2,275 per refugee,
mm-hmm.
But they will not be required to provide ongoing financial support to the refugees they sponsor. That initial amount goes to provide the initial support for the refugees during their first 3 months in the country.
Mm.
The goal is for the refugees to become self-reliant as quickly as possible. So it's a good idea to make that a bit easier for people to move here and help them out to start and not do things like force them onto a plane, you know, sign NDAs, lie to them about where they're going and ship them off to random parts of the country.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That. And we also got this. So a judge in Trump, Clinton handed down a fine of $1 million for him and his lawyer for filing a frivolous lawsuit.
Oh.
Yeah. He filed a lawsuit, I think, last year against Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
just to basically, you know, be a thorn in her side, because he can never let any of that down.
Mm-hmm.
That she was right about him every step of the way in those debates.
Yeah.
We had a Florida judge sanctioned him and one of his attorneys, ordering them to pay nearly $1 million for filing what he said was a bogus lawsuit against his rival Hillary Clinton, as well as others. And I think he immediately after this dropped his lawsuit against New York's Attorney General, Letitia James.
Mm-hmm.
So worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Put out a filing on Thursday. U.S. District Judge Donald M. Middlebrooks accused Trump of a quote-unquote pattern of abuse of the courts for filing frivolous lawsuits for political purposes, which he said undermines the rule of law and amounts to obstruction of justice.
Mm.
Here, we are confronted with a lawsuit that should never have been filed, which is completely frivolous both factually and legally, and which was brought in bad faith for an improper purpose. Which is the thing that, you know, the courts do not like.
Yeah,
there's enough shit going through their systems.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need frivolous shit from people like Trump, who's just throwing a legal temper tantrum and trying to throw his weight around to threaten people, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The ruling required Trump and his attorney, Alina Haba, to pay nearly $938,000 to the defendants in this case. So good job, Trump. Now you owe money to Hillary Clinton and her lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they ain't never seeing that money.
Well, no, but...
No, but yeah. Then she can sue for the money.
Yep.
I mean, it's not like he has any wages that could be garnished.
Yeah. Hint, hint. But, yeah, so anyway, those were our... Now time to move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first story is about sort of a follow-up to this thing that happened back in 2021. You may remember that story of that Army lieutenant who got pulled over and assaulted by Virginia cops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he filed a lawsuit, and he won that lawsuit, and he's been awarded over $3,500 in damages, which, frankly, is nowhere near what I would award, but...
Yeah, he sought $1 million in damages.
Yeah.
Getting $3,685 as a result.
Yeah.
This involved two officers of the Windsor Police Department in April 2021. The lawsuit accused the officers of assault and racial profiling.
Mm-hmm.
and sought $1 million in damages. On Tuesday, the jury awarded him $1,000 in punitive damages after finding that Officer Daniel Crocker conducted an illegal search under state law, and $2,685 in compensatory damages after finding that Officer Joseph Gutierrez, who was fired after the incident, assaulted Nazario.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, the jury found that Crocker violated Nazario's Fourth Amendment right to refuse the search, but that he did so without malice and decided not to grant Nazario any damages for that offense. It also found neither of the officers guilty of falsely imprisoning Nazario, as they, you know, put a zip tie or cuffs on him and sort of put them in their cruiser for a bit while they did their searching and all that. But yeah, apparently after this, he has been suffering from PTSD as a result. So yeah, he deserved more.
Oh yeah,
for dealing with their racial profiling and all the shit they did to him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of hoping, is he gonna try and get some other case going? Because he definitely deserves more money than this.
Yeah,
like this is pathetic.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's probably just gonna try and move on.
Yeah, I don't blame him, honestly. But speaking of unfortunate shit, so you guys remember a while back there was that story of that movie Alec Baldwin was on. It was like an independent Western called Rust, and a prop gun went off and killed someone. I think it was the camera woman. Yeah. Well, Alec Baldwin and the film's armor are going to be charged with involuntary manslaughter in her death.
Yeah. Helena Hutchins is the one that died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the charge makes sense, though I think it's going to be hard for them to, you know, get any hard evidence to stick.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if you don't know, involuntary manslaughter is essentially, you know, you're related to the death in some way, responsible for it, but not directly, like it's not planned or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's some sort of accidental death to a degree, but yeah, I think that'll be tough to really stick and get charges to do anything there. But yeah, it's an awful situation, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think they'll have to go to trial and all that, but yeah.
Yeah. Yes, that shit's gonna happen. God. Anyway, then we got this sort of thing that kind of came out of left field, but anybody who's been paying attention to the situation would say it's also not entirely unexpected. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is planning to step down, and the reason she's given is that you know, during, for those who don't remember, Jacinda Ardern, she was one of the youngest world leaders to be elected when she was elected, and her rule has been under some fairly unusual circumstances. She was in charge after the Christchurch shooting that ended up with the assault weapons ban in New Zealand. She was also in charge during, you know, the COVID pandemic, where she managed to basically, by hook or by crook, keep the pandemic from really spreading to New Zealand until late last year. But she just decided, you know, it's like, I don't think I can necessarily govern very well anymore. You know, the Labour Party is not doing too well in the polls, so she decided to step down. Or step aside, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And I don't think it's also unrelated that, as a woman, leader of, you know, and one of the more progressive leaders in the world, she has gotten a lot of shit.
Oh God, yes, she has.
And I believe that has also added up to her being like, "All right, fuck this.
Mm-hmm.
I've done everything I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go back to being a quiet person,
mm-hmm.
getting away from."
Because the thing is, people don't realize she actually did not want to be leader of the Labour Party in the first place. Like she more or less ended up getting the position because nobody else was wanting to take it, and everybody figured she'd be the best person for the job, which Weirdly enough, those people sometimes end up being some of the best people in power because they never really sought it themselves, and everybody's like, eh, maybe this person will do it. And, I mean, she did a hell of a job when she was in it, but she was like, yeah, I never wanted to be the leader of the Labor Party, and, you know, it's just, I've done my time, it's time for somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. We of course wish her well, and she's gonna have some serious shoes to fill, because like I said, she became like a world celebrity during her time as prime minister. So so like I said at the top of the show, Martin Luther King Day happened this week, which of course is an important holiday, and usually when Martin Luther King Day comes around, there's like new commemorations and, you know, pieces that are put out to commemorate him and the day. And there was this new one that was revealed in Boston, Massachusetts. And it's been getting some mixed reviews, mostly because it's a little too abstract about what it's trying to put forward. Supposedly, it's based on a photograph of him hugging his late wife, and the sculptor doesn't really get it across that well.
Yeah, it's like, if you see more shots, it's two arms kind of hugging each other, two sets of arms. It does not look like that.
Yeah, and if you look at it from the side, it kind of looks like a hall, which is like, okay, that's nice.
Yeah, like the shot they have here looks like, you know, two arms holding somebody's head.
Yeah.
But then it's like, other ways it looks more phallic.
In other ways, it looks like some dude just rammed his head up his ass.
Yeah. And it's like, I get the idea, I think.
Yeah.
It went too abstract.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, a lot of people are like, this seems dumb.
Yeah.
Seems like not a great, you know, tribute to him and his wife.
Yeah.
Not that they necessarily needed to do any thing too complicated, but it's also like, I guess it cost $10 million, it says. So yeah, it's like, that money could have been better spent for maybe a more simple statue or something. I don't know, but yeah. It's also a very Boston thing for this to be the way that they honor, you know, a major black political leader.
Oh, right. Yeah, good point. Yeah, Boston is one of the most racist cities in America. Oh, I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there.
Yeah.
It's not even disputed. It's just a fact.
Yeah, when Bill Russell was, you know, winning the city championships in the NBA as part of the Boston Celtics, his home regularly got broken into.
Yeah.
As people wrote messages, you know, with the N-word in it and all that. And it's like, this is literally one of their most beloved sports figures.
Yep.
And he knew that he was not welcome in that city so much as he should have been.
Yeah.
And he's not the only one. There's athletes for decades have been talking about, you know, audiences yelling shit at them. So much so, I think the Red Sox had to deal with it at a certain point because black players on the other team were getting the N-word yelled at them by white people.
Yeah.
And MLK is just a yearly tradition of white people telling, you know, his children that are on Twitter what his dad was talking about. It's like, oh, great job. These kids knew exactly what his dad was about.
Yeah, well, also, it was also the day when you hear, quote, that one part of the I Have a Dream speech and never say anything else about the rest of it.
Oh, yeah, Ron DeSantis' contribution to the holiday.
Yeah, because they have to do that, because if they talk about the rest of it, it basically goes against their entire platform.
Yeah.
Remember, the March on Washington was called the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. There was a huge economic part to it. I remember when he was assassinated, he was campaigning with sanitation workers who were on strike. So keep that in your mind. Next up, Amazon will end its Amazon Smile program that donated a percent of purchases to charity on February 20th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta say, I am really, really angry about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Launched in 2013, is ending 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying something, yeah, like here after almost a decade, the program has not grown to create the impact that we had originally hoped.
Mm-hmm.
So many eligible organizations, more than 1 million globally, our ability to have an impact was often spread too thin.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's raised about $500 million for mm-hmm. charities. So that's not enough. Also, Amazon, you could change the percentage.
Mm-hmm.
That's fully within your control and your Amazon. You don't give a shit about money.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, it just allowed you to sign into Amazon Smile and designate like a charity
mm-hmm.
That would get a percentage of your cuts or cut of your purchases, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so like Amazon's to the point of, like, we want that money.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to have that $500 yeah. million dollars to ourselves.
We need more and more and more money, more beautiful, beautiful money.
It made a big difference to the groups that were receiving it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I'm kind of mad about it because it went to Feral Fixers, which is a local trap, neuter, and release program that helps out cats in our county. And by extension, helps out humans, too. I mean, come on. You know, keeping them healthy and keeping them from reproducing helps just the overall community, period. And so once they stop it, I think the last distributions are going to go out like in March or so. I'm going to call customer service and I'm going to be a Karen and I'm going to say, I want my membership prorated returned to me and I will not mm-hmm. be giving you guys a membership fee.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to give that money straight to the charity that you fucked over.
Yeah.
Well, I know that it's going to fall on deaf ears, but it's my only small impotent feeling of you know action that I can do. I know it means nothing, but
yeah, it'll be that scene in The Simpsons where Moe's raking in the money off of Homer's alcoholic drink. Mm-hmm. He's like, "You've lost a customer." He's like, "What? I can't hear you." It's like, "You've lost a customer."
Mm-hmm.
It's just the sound of him just cashing money, opening his register, and all that.
Yeah. Sadly, that is entirely accurate.
Mm-hmm. But
that's a good idea. Stop giving money to Amazon. Donate it directly to the charity you want to support.
Yeah.
Yep. I've already thought about, okay, well, I really like this one shampoo that I get from them. I have it on, whatever. You know what? Fuck it. I can get some other shampoo. Mm-hmm. It's going to be all right. I'm trying to make sure that all the stuff that I used to buy from them, you know, the weirdo shit, you know, I can either find a workaround or find it locally.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And especially as they're continually making their service worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shipping times and all that get worse and worse because it turns out having speedy shipping costs a lot of money.
Mm.
And the shit that you're getting is horrible quality. We returned a cat scratcher that literally disintegrated. We tried to take the bottom of an old spool or something, you know, like a wire spool, and glue and screw it into it, and the rest of the particle board just simply gave way.
Mm.
So their stuff is shit.
That's where you just get boxes for the cat.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, just use all your Amazon boxes, tape them together, and let the cat jump through them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cut some holes.
They'd be happier with that.
Mm-hmm.
But all their stuff is just shit quality. It's turning into Wish 2.0. So
yeah,
and I'm gonna order, you know, this because it's gonna be genuine. It's not gonna be a counterfeit thing from Amazon. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. That's happening. Just more news that the tech industry is just kind of in the middle of a bloodbath right now. Google has announced that they're cutting 12,000 jobs.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about 6% of their global workforce.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Let's see. Yeah. I think it was even done poorly enough that people that worked in their New York City office either got emails too late before they were commuting in and essentially found out when they, you know, tried to swipe their badges to get in, mm-hmm. whether they were still working there or not.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, New York City commuting is very famous for being so fun.
Oh, yeah.
Find out if
fun
you're working.
And enjoyable and just... It's a tradition, really. Yeah, and it's like, it doesn't cost a damn thing. Just...
Yeah.
God, just... Yeah, more reasons to show how shitty a company Google is.
There.
Yeah, and this is just part of the... what I've been calling infinite growth capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just the notion that we have to have growth every year that's continually getting bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And the narrative that these companies are putting out is like, oh, we hired too many people during the pandemic and now we have to make these cuts because of that. It's like, no, you're fucking Google.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They literally
are like the biggest company on the planet. Like,
right. They've launched so many goddamn pieces of software and whatnot that they've just and hardware too that they've abandoned, you know, after they lose interest. What do you expect? Nobody trusts your shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, their CEO will just keep getting paid huge salaries.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
For just making sure the company doesn't go into bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they make most of the money off of Android stuff and Google search.
Mm-hmm.
You know, selling people's data.
Yeah.
I have to think YouTube has to be like number three on their
Yeah, YouTube is profitable.
And with all those ads they put in there.
Yeah.
And the people who pay not to have the ads.
Thank you, Firefox.
I think the ads are probably more
more
of a moneymaker because, you know, the vast majority of people are not going to pay for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to, though. You can just get Firefox like I do.
You can, unless half or two-thirds of your family uses mobile only for the most part.
In which case,
Then it's $22.99, not that anything.
You like to see
county.
What weird fucking ads they get on there?
Mm. Yeah, it's weird. It's like it's usually like not even in your language. Like it's...
Or it'd be just weird stuff that's like, this is a six-minute ad.
Yeah.
And you're like, why is this 6 minutes? When they're talking about, like, you know, natural soap and all this weird shit.
It's the modern example of commercial, basically.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't build that damn antenna out of wood and coat hangers that I'm planning on making somebody else do.
What was that? When I was watching What We Do in the Shadows, I was looking at their ads and immediately got one that was for Christian dating site.
Yep.
I was like, oh, this is great to have during What We Do in the Shadows.
Was it ChristianMingle.com?
No, it was something else. But I'm pretty sure it was a network of these things. Because then there was one for single parents. And there was one for Latinos. I was like, there must have been some ad deal with the network of these things. Because these are all the same ad. But people be like, it's great when I can date other single parents that know what I've been going through. I'm like, what?
You need to fix your algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
This is all during What We Do in the Shadows, the thing that very much is related to this.
Oh, just so much.
Mm.
All Christians love What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually.
Mm. Anyway. So yeah, that's happening. And now here's some really fun news. The first cases of a strain of gonorrhea that's resistant to several classes of antibiotics has been identified in the U.S.
Yeah, this has been something health officials have been saying was going to happen, where we would start having viruses and such that are resistant to antibiotics because we've been just giving them out to so many people for not really any great reason that they're starting to not work.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have many courses for countering that without maybe some major discoveries at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah,
now, The good news is there's only been two cases of it that have been found so far.
Yeah,
and,
so far.
And the thing that is that what happens is when you get with a sexually transmitted disease, a lot of times they'll get a caseworker involved that then has to sort of try and find, I don't want to necessarily say patient zero because that's not really how it works, but try and get sort of a timeline of how it spread, which means they can do a fairly good job of stopping it spreading even any further. But the bad news is that this is also a strain of gonorrhea that's resistant to most antibiotics at the moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's not good.
Yep. And yeah, we got some super gonorrhea now.
Yeah, fantastic. Fan-freaking-tastic.
Double up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hopefully they'll be able to find another way to deal with it. Yeah, so that's...
Cut it off.
Yeah, that's going to be wonderful. Just wonderful. Just so many great things about living in the 2020s, you know?
It really doesn't take much imagination to figure out how humanity could end.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we didn't just have to have a world-changing pandemic. No, we also had an extremely virulent case of monkeypox, and now a strain of gonorrhea that's antibiotic-resistant. Fan-frickin-tastic.
Thanks. People really like public health officials now.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Saying don't do a thing.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, the correct answer to that is okay, not challenge accepted.
Mm-hmm. And also remember to wrap it up and don't be stupid.
Yes.
Seriously. But now we're now firmly into the portion of the show, more or less. I'm certainly entertained. We're starting with this the ongoing saga of Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast, and their sort of ongoing screwing with the OGL for Dungeons and Dragons. Well, it looks like they've got a new OGL getting ready. It's going to put its core rules under the Creative Commons license. So,
wow, yeah. They folded.
Yeah.
At least so far, people are still looking into all the details on this stuff
mm-hmm.
to make sure it's going the way that they are saying.
Yeah.
But it seems promising so far, as they are saying they are going to include its core rules under the purview of the Creative Commons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is a nonprofit dedicated to sharing knowledge, and it developed a set of licenses to let creators do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the Creative Commons license will cede Wizards of the Coast control over the base rules and mechanics of D&D to the nonprofit that stewards the license, which means that Dungeons and Dragons and World Wizards of the Coast will be unable to touch it, will not be able to revoke it.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, content that goes beyond the remit of using core rules will fall under a new OGL, dubbed 1.2, which will contain specific language denoting the license as irrevocable, a massive pressure point for creators who use the original OGL 1.0 were worried that the new one would have the 30-day termination clause, and like the notion that, oh, if you create something, campaign or whatever through the D&D framework that took off, they could potentially just say like, oh, we'll take this license and we will option it for, shows and movies and whatever. And you guys won't have the control over it that you can, but now they're going back on a lot of this stuff and letting people have that control of it once again. So that people stop, canceling their subscription to D&D Beyond and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully this all, when it goes official, is all on the up and up. We'll have to see mm-hmm. how the community takes to that. But yeah, seems like it's in a promising direction now.
Yeah, so far.
Yeah.
Watch it, because this is Hasbro we're talking about, and they can pull some shit at the last minute if you're not watching. Yeah. So anyway, next up, we got some news out of Netflix. Reed Hastings down as the co-CEO, because you guys probably noticed Netflix is having some issues right now.
Yeah. He is still going to be on the board, chairman, executive chairman of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Will be running things as co-CEO. Ted Sarandos will continue to have that role alongside Greg Peters, who was previously the chief product officer and COO.
Mm-hmm.
Those two will be the co-CEOs now. And they moved other positions around for that. So, yeah, hopefully that helps give a little bit of fresh blood to running the company.
Mm-hmm.
They still seem to be doing all right on the subscriber front. As I said, they added 7.7 million new subscribers in the fourth quarter, more than a 4.5 at forecast. So we'll have to see. But always good to have a change of scenery for that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's see, what else? Oh, yeah. So you guys know how the Saudis now have a golf league?
Yeah.
And there's been this ongoing, like, decision, like, who's going to be the network to sign on for it? Well, we know who it's going to be now. It's going to be the CW. The CW decided to be the network to sign a deal with Saudi Golf League, LIV Golf.
Yeah, LIV Golf. You know, the network you would expect. The one famous for, you know, Arrow and Gossip Girl. Getting into Blood Money Golf. LIV Golf, which has not done super well. Mainly because they've been only broadcasting through like YouTube streams and that kind of stuff until now. But yeah, I guess they will be. Yeah, they got a multi-year rights deal with LIV Golf. Let's see, they'll air 14 events in 2023. We'll stream the events live on its app. Yeah, they have weekend tournaments. Will air live on Saturdays and Sundays on their network and stream online for the Friday round. So yeah, if you have, if you want to watch more golf, I guess there you go.
Yeah.
But it's all funded by Blood Money. So
yep.
A lot of golfers have decided like, hey, I like Blood Money. Which includes a lot of big names, but it's not a huge surprise. Golfers are very much the kind of people that don't like the idea of income tax.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff, because they're not employees of, you know, the PGA or LIV Golf.
Nope.
They're independent contractors. Why should I pay income tax? I'm not getting, I'm winning these earnings.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not how it works.
Nope. Yeah. And now we got some other news. Cobra Kai is going to finally end with its upcoming sixth season.
Yeah, going to be fun to see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been doing some wild ass stuff.
Oh yeah.
And so yeah, they're gonna have their final season. I don't know if they have a time frame for it, but yeah they put out a video about season six. I don't think there's any footage in it, just about the new one coming. But yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah,
the weird thing is they put out like a tweet from the Cobra Kai Twitter account calling it the Miyagi-verse, which I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
That's what they've been calling it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, no. No. You know, I don't know, calling the Daniel-verse is better or anything.
I don't know. And then we got news that Tron is coming back. There's now a third Tron movie that seems to be in the works, and it's going to be starring Jared Leto.
Yep.
I'm not sure how to take that news.
Didn't see that one coming.
You know, my favorite part of Tron was when Tron went, it's Tron time. Yeah, does that mean like, dead by now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly is now.
But yeah, I don't think you're going to have the writers of those movies, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are bringing him in. The director of Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, is in talks to direct this one. I think the tentative title is Tron Ares. No idea what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Or if any of the other people are coming back from Legacy. Though as long as they don't do any weird de-aging CG, though it's progressed a lot better since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Some sort of Tron 3 is happening as Disney waits every decade to revive Tron.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And here's another one. So y'all probably know The Last of Us, the TV adaptation, is on HBO Max now, and it's actually really good. And it had the second biggest premiere for HBO in the last 13 years.
Oh, wow.
Which I guess means that the only thing that didn't do it was that managed to beat it was Game of Thrones.
No, House of the Dragon.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I mean, tangentially yes. related, but yes, yeah, point made.
Yeah, it's the most recent Game of Thrones because, you know, the morbid curiosity and why not?
Mm-hmm.
People hated that last season of Game of Thrones for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You'll think, like, oh, I'm done with Game of Thrones. But you're like, ah, there's dragons. Why not? But, yeah, this has supposedly reached more than 10 million viewers across its first 2 days of availability. House of Dragons, let's see, was just ahead of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the initial numbers was 4.7 million U.S. viewers across both linear HBO channel and streamer HBO Max. Through Nielsen ratings.
Mm-hmm.
For that. And I think, what were the numbers for House of Dragon? Where's that at here?
Mm-hmm.
Not sure why they don't have it here, but yeah, I think it was like 7.9 or something. I don't know, but it was a good bit more. Yeah, Game of Thrones itself only garnered 4.2 million premiere viewers in 2011.
Mm.
So, yeah. But then that show was not, you know, well known than that property,
mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones. But yeah, this one has been riding a lot of hype,
mm-hmm.
especially having, you know, Pedro Pascal as the lead on this,
mm-hmm.
having Bella Ramsey in there, who came off of a great stint on Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Set up for a good start.
Mm-hmm.
Which I wonder how many people that never have seen anything from the game had to deal with the way that shit opens.
Oh, God, yes. That has to be one of the most traumatizing opening in game history.
Yeah, a real gut punch that was notable for games.
Yeah.
Maybe less so for shows, but still is a big one.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah,
and you know it's going to get better after that.
Oh God, yeah, because I played that. I distinctly remember just about every part of that game when I first played it, and yeah, it doesn't look up from there. It just gets worse.
Yeah, and they'll be dipping into the expansion as well.
Yeah, with
Ellie before she met Joel.
Yeah. Oh boy, I can just see the responses now.
So yeah, have fun, people.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, we got an official trailer for The Mandalorian Season 3.
Yep. More Star Wars is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And more of the Star Wars that is less about how evil society is,
mm-hmm.
like Andor is. All that kind of fun stuff. This is like, hey, what if the Metal Man is riding in his ship with his best buddy,
mm-hmm.
and all that kind of stuff? And yeah, they're getting everybody back: Carl Weathers, Amy Sedaris, mm-hmm. Giancarlo Esposito, all the gang's back. That'll be March 1st on Disney Plus when that debuts.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. They've given up on the Book of Boba Fett experiments that turn into season 2.5 of The Mandalorian.
Yep.
And now we're on season 3,
mm-hmm.
for real. So yeah. That's good. Great year for Pedro Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
He's in two of the biggest shows of the year.
Yep.
The one of them, you don't see him ever.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I do believe we've got ourselves a show, folks. We are going to go ahead and wrap it up here. I would like to remind all our listeners, if you have a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, or archive.org. Pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And, yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Thank you to Pat, Teresa, and Chris for joining me tonight. We'll be seeing you all next week. If you love the show, please, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your individual enemies that may hate you but end up liking us. And, as long as they find out, then they can do whatever. I mean, we're outside the splash zone anyway, so who gives a shit? Good night, everybody.